We've gotten past the point where it is considered acceptable to refer to mental patients as crazy or worse in polite conversation. We know more about mental illness and the people affected by it than we used to, but there's still a road to travel ahead for greater understanding and acceptance of mental patients and their issues. The National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, works to get us down that road. Pat Garut is the president of NAMI Southern Oregon. She's here to talk about mental illness generally and about some specific events coming up in Southern Oregon. Pat, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a bit about NAMI and why it first formed up in the first place.
NAMI National formed in 1979, and it was actually formed by two mothers who were seeking help for their children that had schizophrenia and could not find any help for them. And so it was started that way. It now has over 1,100 affiliates throughout the United States, and we are one of them here in Southern Oregon.
That's a bunch of affiliates, and I imagine a whole bunch of members.
Yes.
Throughout those affiliates. What's the basic thrust of NAMI then? I mean, the Alliance on Mental Illness doesn't tell you a whole lot about what the purpose is.
Well, our purpose is to educate society about mental illness and also to advocate for the mentally ill and their families. We advocate in many ways through having educational programs like the one we'll be having May 5th. Right here at SOU.
Now tell us about that, as long as we're on that subject.
Well, it's called In Our Own Voice, In Our Story, and it is being sponsored by NAMI, Southern Oregon, and also the United Nations Club. And it will be on May 5th from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Art Building in the Art Museum Auditorium. And our first presentation will be called In Our Own Voice. And what that is peers of mental illness living well with their mental illness, telling their stories from their darkest moments to trying to cope, to trying to get help, where their dreams and hopes for their future lie. And then for the first time ever, I will be telling my own personal life story of living in a family of seven siblings, who five of my siblings have mental illness.
Five of seven, really?
Yes. And then there'll be we'll be open to question and answer periods on how we can better help people with mental illness. As you know, maybe you don't, about 16% to 24% of people with mental illness are in our jails and prisons. And it's the only illness I know of that you are incarcerated for having.
So how do they end up? I mean, do these people have committed crimes? Is that the usual? I mean, they have to get into jail or prison.
Yes, they have. Most of them are miscellaneous or type 1 felonies. So many of them are wandering the streets homeless because of their mental illness. No help available to them. They get hungry. They get cold. They want cigarettes, so they will go in and a store and pilfer something and get caught. And so they are put in jail.
Since part of what you're talking about coming up for this weekend's activities is people talking about their own stories, I mean, obviously mental illness can be managed up to a point, it seems like. I mean, we don't have the huge state hospitals where we're essentially warehousing the mentally ill, at least not in the same numbers we used to. Is there a sense that there are many more people who could function in daily society with the proper medication, with the proper attention and treatment?
Absolutely. Most of them can. The problem we have is over almost 10,000 psychiatric beds have been closed.
Well, I guess the obvious question is why? I mean, why are there so few beds for psychiatric
care?
Well,
I think economics. And this year, 2014, we have less psychiatric beds for people with mental illness than we did in the year 1850. So we are not going forward. We are going backward.
Well, on one hand, isn't that a good thing that there are fewer psychiatric beds? Because that implies then at least that we're not running big institutions, or am I just interpreting this completely wrong?
I don't think it's helpful when they're homeless. When they're under the bridges, when they're wandering our streets, when they are in their altered state of mind. And so many people with schizophrenia and bipolar illness do not know they have an illness, and so they don't seek help. And so, no. The other thing that happens, I call it the vicious cycle. They are picked up on the streets, taken to the behavioral unit in Medford. They can keep them 72 hours, and then they release them. But there is no place to release them to. We have a very, very large shortage of what we call respite homes, where they could be released from the psychiatric ward and put into a respite home for more care until they got more stable, able to maybe get on some kind of Medicare or the Oregon Health Plan, able to have a home to live in instead of the streets and the parks, able to get on medication, able to get help, able to get therapy. That is very, very lacking. And so what you have is a vicious cycle. They get picked up. They go to the psychiatric ward. They are released. Even 6 hours sometimes, 12 hours later, they are brought right back in. So we are very, very lacking on help for mental illness.
We're talking to Pat Garut, the president of NAMI Southern Oregon, NAMI being the National Alliance on Mental Illness. You can join our discussion about how we deal with mental illness in society today. Our phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I know we've talked about the pathway that we have taken in this country about the treatment of mental illness. So, yes, we're no longer warehousing in quite the same way we used to, but it sounds like we've replaced the lock-up beds in state hospitals with locked-up beds in state prisons.
Absolutely.
Is it a one-for-one sort of match, or is it a little more?
No, I don't think it's a one-for-one sort of match because so many of them are homeless. They're wandering our streets. They're under our bridges.
What happened then? I mean, obviously, it seems like people's hearts were in the right place. I mean, there's general agreement that you don't want to have people locked up if they don't have to be. But what was supposed to replace the system of the large state hospitals?
Well, it was supposed to be replaced by community facilities throughout the communities. And, of course, the allocations for the funds were not met. And so without the funds to continue the community help, it just all fell apart.
Was there funding at one time and it was just withdrawn, rescinded?
No, there was no funding. It was supposed to be funded, the closing of the mental hospitals. And the funds were to go to the communities, well, like Ashland, like Medford, to have community mental health facilities for people with mental health. And Congress did not allocate the funds for that to take place.
And it sounds like the states haven't picked up the slack.
Pardon?
The states have not picked
no,
up the slack.
Very,
Congress
very
did
little.
Not fund it.
Very
right.
little.
So how should we be treating mental illness, Pat? What's the general opinion of NAMI and you, for that matter?
You should be treating mental illness like any other illness. It is an illness. We treat diabetes. We treat HIV. We treat AIDS. We treat heart problems. We treat cancer. We do not put them in prison. It is an illness of the brain, and it is a chemical imbalance of the brain. It is nothing that they brought on themselves. And it needs to be treated as what it is an illness.
And so how do we get people to stay on their meds if the big issue is just making sure that they're getting treated for their illness and need to continue taking medication to make sure that the symptoms have subsided? What's the pathway there? What kinds of assistance, care, treatment, observation are necessary?
Well, right now, after you turn 18, you can accept medicine or not accept medicine. And the problem that I see as president of NAMI of Southern Oregon, I get many, many phone calls into my home. And most of them deal with someone calling about their adult child who has gone off of their medication and is getting psychotic again. And due to our civil rights law, they have the right to refuse medication. And I think that law is so very, very old. I do not think when that was put in place that they really understood that so many of people with mental illness do not realize they are mentally ill.
In a sense, they're the last to know.
And so they don't get help.
So, but that creates an interesting set of circumstances here, because we're trying not to, as a society, lock people up if they don't have to be locked up. I mean, at least in mental health facilities. Obviously, we've gone a different direction with jail and prison, as has been pointed out here and many times. But at the same time, you don't want to force people to take medication as well, do you? I mean, you get some tricky ethical questions there, too, don't you?
Yes, you do get ethical questions. In all the years that I have been helping people with mental illness, I think sometimes there has to be a human right, not just the civil right, but the human right for people with mental illness to be treated like humans and to be able to get the help they need. A home, food, clothing, some kind of help with their medication. And also another thing that is prevalent in our country is about 60 to 70% of people with mental illness also have a drug or an alcohol problem. And so our system is so lacking in treating what I call the dual diagnosis part of mental illness.
The 60 to 70% with problems with drugs and alcohol, I mean, these are people who are self-medicating, in essence. They're,
yes.
they're trying to find ways to stop
yes.
feeling the way they're feeling.
Right. A lot of it quiets the voices that are in their head from schizophrenia. A lot of it is to make them feel good. And so they self-medicate, yes.
Pat Garrood is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the president of NAMI Southern Oregon. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we continue our discussion of approaches to mental illness and taking it out of the shadows and letting the public know about it. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. I guess it's sort of overly obvious to say this, but there's clearly still a big stigma with mental illness.
Absolutely.
I mean, and you and I share silver hair, so I'm not giving away too much about our relative ages, but this is the first time you mentioned this weekend where you're telling the story of your siblings, five of your seven siblings mentally ill.
Yes.
So you would not have kept that in the shadows this long, I'm thinking, if there weren't still a great stigma attached to mental illness.
I have never kept it in the shadows. I have fought for it most of my life. I have fought for them most of my life in one way or another. But I feel the stigma that still surrounds mental illness. They need to see it from the family's point of view. We hear so much about the person with a mental illness, but so very little has been said or been told about the chaotic life, the struggles that the families have trying to help their mentally ill person, because the help is not available.
Is the primary purpose of NAMI then to help out families who are dealing with loved ones with mental illness, or is it educational for the rest of the general public, or is it a combination thereof?
It's a combination of many things. It's to help the mentally ill and the families. We do have a library in Medford. It's a mental health library. It's a resource center. But we also have educational programs. We have what we call a family-to-family education course. I just taught our celebration 12th class last night, where we celebrated. We have a peer-to-peer education course, and that is taught by peers living well with a mental illness, to peers with mental illness, so they understand their mental illness better. I know I had a very dear friend that was a veteran, and she was 65 years old. And when she took that class, she started crying, and she said, you know, for the first time, I understand what my mental illness is. They just told her she has schizophrenia. There's no education beyond that in our mental health, in our health system, and that also needs to be reckoned with. We also have an In Our Own Voice presentation, which we will be doing May 5th, and we've already talked about that.
All right, let's take a call here. We have Michael in Mendocino on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Pat Garrut from NAMI Southern Oregon.
Well, good morning. I would like to know if that measurement that you have of mental illness, could that carry across the social levels of things? Could you use that same measurement, let's say, for politics or Wall Street? I'm not trying to be funny about this, but it seems like there's a, you know, levels of acceptance for mental illness from one segment of society to the other. And I'm just wondering if you have a measurement that could identify people in power who may be addicted to certain elements of that power. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
All right. That's a challenging question.
I'm not for sure what he is.
When you look at the standards of what identifies somebody as being mentally ill, if you could apply those same standards to people in positions of power, and the ones he cited were Wall Street and politics, and determine that some of those people might be addicted to power, as some of the people are addicted to drugs and alcohol.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that 100%.
So what is the first and most important thing that people need to know before we go about mental illness, if they have not dealt with it in their own families?
Well, it is an illness, and it is caused by a chemical imbalance of the brain. It is not brought on by the people who suffer from it. They don't put a needle in their arm. They don't put a bottle to their mouth. It is a chemical imbalance of the brain, and it can hit anybody at any time. And about 1 out of 5 people will suffer from mental illness in their lifetime.
1 out of 5. Okay, and Our Voice, Our Own Voice, and Our Story presented at the auditorium. The Mies Auditorium at the Art Building on the Southern Oregon University campus, Monday the 5th from 5 to 8 p.m.
Yes.
Pat Garrut, thanks so much for joining us today in the Exchange.
Thank you.